From the Land to Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of May, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's a TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing. We'll preview an interview I have with Enrique Monaco about consolidation in the fertilizer industry. Today, we'll just hear about how much fertilizer the United States uses from across the planet and how much of it is produced domestically. Then later in the week, we'll talk more with Enrique. And later in this program, we'll talk about the weather forecast. We'll do that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.52.5, a nickel lower. December new crop at $4.77.5 a bushel, down 4.5 cents. July beans 3/4 lower. Settlement price there at $11.85 1/4. November $11.81.5, up 1 1/4. Bean meal finished $2 higher, and the bean oil up 90 cents. Wheat futures, soft red July, down 13. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com. The elevator in Champaign County now joins us to tip. Oh, let me just start over. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com. The elevator here in Champaign County now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Greg, thanks so much for being with us. The week's been, I guess, fairly calm this week. Despite some gyrations taking place in the Strait of Hormuz and between Iran and the United States, I'm wondering what you're thinking about this marketplace.
Yeah, it's kind of a case of short-term versus long-term. If you're a short-term trader, we're getting the crop planted. We're still ahead of schedule, so that's negative to the price. The crop is warming up, the weather is warming up. And we've started to dry out in some places that had too much rain. So I think the crop will look better in another week to 10 days than what it did a week ago. So that's another negative to the price. And then you throw on top of that the Middle East discussions, which seems to go back and forth every day. But today they seem to think that we're closer to an agreement than we were a few days ago. And so crude oil prices are down about $4 a barrel this morning, and that's pressuring the grain markets as well. So in the short run, we've got some negative things, and that's what the market is responding to. But longer term, I always say it's, you know, this growing a crop is like a hurdle race, and you got to get over four or five hurdles, and the first hurdle is planting. And we got over it with only a bruised shin. There's a fair amount of replant that had to take place here in Illinois. So we bruised our shin getting over that first hurdle, but I think we did get over it. And now we're going to just sit back and wait and see what the weather does in July and August. June weather usually doesn't matter a whole lot, so it's hard to come up with anything real positive here in the short run unless people tend to believe the longer-term weather forecast. There's some people talking about a flash drought showing up here in June. Others are talking about the Super El Nino, and we don't know when that, if or when that would show up and what effect that would have on Midwest production. So longer-term, there's still a lot of unknowns and variables out there. But in the short run, the crop got planted. It's off to a good start. Small crops don't need a lot of rain, and the Middle East situation seems like it goes back and forth every day.
So a couple of things about June and the weather, and I'm wondering what your historical context will tell you. Emerson Napsiger has said, you know, a dry June, as of recent anyway, I think a corn crop does pretty well in that. Now, normally, we had been thinking we need 4 inches of rainfall in Illinois in June and 4 inches of rainfall or an inch a week in July as well to make a really good crop. The state climatologist Trent Ford, some of the meteorologists will say, you know, our rain events are further apart, but they're larger events. So do you think a flash drought matters that much on yield potentially in the month of June? And I'm probably getting quite a little bit outside of your expertise. And or does it present an opportunity for producers? to market a crop?
I think it presents the opportunity. Just like you said, we can talk about a flash drought, but do we know what effect it will have? If we are dry in June, but then we have to turn off wet in July and August again, get our normal 1 inch of rain every week, I think we could still have a pretty good crop. So I'm all for talking up flash droughts and super El Niños. In the same breath, I have to remind farmers that $5 corn and $12 beans are nothing to sneeze at. I think we can make money at those prices. And we've had opportunities to sell $5 futures and $12 new crop bean futures. And we're not there today. We're, like I say, we're in this short-term sell-off period. But if we do get an opportunity as a result of whatever, inflation, funds, weather scare, 5 and 12 may not look like a bad place to sell some grain when it's all said and done.
Have producers done a pretty good job as of recent of making sales at those prices for new crop, and did they lean into finishing old crop off?
It's really slowed up, even with the last rally we had. I think farmers felt like maybe they sold beans, new crop beans, a little too soon, you know, that first 25 to 30%. And so rather than scale up sell, which is what I think we should do, it seems like they put the brakes on and they're just going to be content with only having sold 25 to 30% at this point, and they're waiting to see what the market will do. And so far that hasn't hurt them too badly. Beans did get a little over $12 on the board, and today they're around $11.85. So it really hasn't hurt them too much to not sell more beans. But at some point in time, you know, if we see more acres switch over to beans on the June 30th acreage report, if the weather still looks good, if we still don't see China show up and buy beans, there's some potentially negative things out there longer term, but those are all down the road. So in the short run, beans are hanging in there at $11.85, 15 cents off of contract highs. And as far as new crop corn is concerned, we're kind of down in the lower half of the range again. We did get up to 505 on December futures. Today we're around 480. And so we're 10 cents off the low, 25 cents off that high of that 2 month trading range that we've been in.
I guess for both of them, the good news is the trading range isn't that wide. So it's not that far to get to the top end. However, the bottom end is not that far away, too. And I suppose the real fear is that dropping through those technicals would become a problem at some point for both new crop corn and soybeans.
Exactly. The fundamentals would argue that the beans probably have a little bit more potential to go down. But you can't prove that today. I guess they're looking at the potential for, increased mandatory, soybean renewable biodiesel leading to more soybean oil usage. And so the soybean oil market is near the all-time high right now, and meal's hanging in there as well. It's usually meal's been the drag on the market, and soybeans respond more to the meal price than the oil, but meal prices, for whatever reason, are hanging in there. So you've got strong oil prices and okay meal prices, and as a result, beans are only 10-15 cents off their highs.
I made note earlier in the week that Argentina says it's going to lower its taxes or export tax on soybeans, and it primarily would be bean meal as opposed to whole soybeans. When those come into the marketplace, how much of an impact? And did the market not worry about that at this point?
The story was out, and I think it was digested, but I don't think it's really been factored in. I think that's, when does it get implemented? Is that a later this year thing? I think it's a gradual reduction, if
it
I
is.
Remember. Yeah, so nothing that you can point to on July 1st, for example, all of a sudden the tax is 3%, 5% lower. I think it's ratcheted down over time, and so it really hasn't impacted the market yet, but that's something that over time, that's just another potential negative that you can put right up there with more acres, less demand from China, and more beans being planted down in South America as well as here in the U.S.
Now, I want to turn your attention back to corn, but old crop this time. Ed Usset, agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota, has a golden rule that says thou shalt not carry old crop past July 1, so we have a month. How are producers doing?
Well, there was a survey taken not too long ago, I think last week, that said farmers are 81% sold up on old crop corn. and beans, they're 92% sold up on old crop corn. So I think that, you know, there's still 20% of corn of the corn out there that hasn't been sold yet. But it feels like there's enough optimism that we didn't get off to the greatest start here in central Illinois. Maybe less corn acres because of the higher input costs. I think most farmers are going to wait until the June 30th report and then see what the July pollination weather does before they let loose of that last 20%, which is okay. But on that same survey showed that farmers are only 12% sold on new crop corn and only, or 13% sold on new crop corn and 12% on new crop beans. So I think we're a little bit farther along than that here in central Illinois. But nevertheless, there's a lot of new crop corn and beans that still need to be sold. So I would keep that in mind, you know, when making your marketing decisions as well.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. The Farm Doc team has posted a new article about consolidation trends in the fertilizer industry in the United States. Henrique Monaco led that team, along with Nick Paulson, Gary Schnitke, and Carl Zuloff. In it, they explore consolidation, and you can find the article on our website at willag.org right now. The team says the United States accounts for about 10 to 15% of total global fertilizer consumption, and they broke it out into N, P, and K.
For potassium specifically, the import reliance is very high, and Canada is the main partner. When it comes to phosphate and nitrogen, those numbers are much lower, 13 and 6%. That means that the U.S. has the capacity, and let's bring it back to nitrogen here. It has a good domestic production capacity in terms of ammonia production, or which is used for other nitrogen products as well.
Again, that's Henrique Monaco. He is a member of the FarmDoc team, and they have posted a new article to the FarmDoc Daily website. It's at willag.org about consolidation in the fertilizer industry. That's just one quick comment from a much longer interview that we'll hear later in the week from Henrique. But again, you can find it now, today, at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I want to start in the southeast today, work our way across the Delta, and then into the southwest and up to the plains, kind of the drier areas of the United States into the Canadian prairies. The southeast had been suffering through some really dry conditions into the Delta region as well. Has that been abated at all?
It has been largely eased, to say the least. The rains have been quite erratic in the southeast. I was talking to a gentleman this morning, and he was telling me that one of his neighbors had 10 inches of rain overnight last night. Well, I can't find that in my radar data, but that's what they reported. But there's been other pockets that have had 3 to 5, even 7 inches in pockets, really. You want to emphasize the pockets in the past week, and greatly easing some of the dryness that's been prevalent in the southeastern states. They were probably the second driest on record in some spots in South Carolina over the last 6 months. So this was a pretty big and important change for the corn, soybeans, and peanuts and cotton that are produced in that region. So definitely seeing an improving trend, and there's more rain coming up for those areas. The Delta has already had some decent rains in recent weeks, and they are continuing to see that rainy pattern continuing off and on. So they, too, are working their way out of the droughty environment. I don't know that we can wipe it all out in a short 2 or 3 week period, but we're certainly making huge strides, and there's plenty of moisture for crops to feed upon, even if the long-term moisture deficits are still large.
The hard red winter wheat growing regions of the Plains, Texas for corn too, I suppose. How's that doing?
Yeah, you know, better late than never. We are expecting to see some scattered showers and some thunderstorms occur in that region on an almost daily basis for the coming week. After that, it'll probably turn a little bit drier as the ridge of high pressure kind of settles over that region for about 5 or 7 days. But the overall bottom line is this moisture is good for late season crops. It's just not going to put back the yield we've lost in some of the hard red winter wheat areas. So, you know, we'll hold it at status quo. We're not going to see a big turnaround. Certainly the moisture in West Texas, we don't talk about cotton too much, but cotton, corn, and sorghum produced in West Texas, it needs to get planted, and they're getting some scattered showers now. They need a lot more rain, but at least they're getting a little bit of moisture, and there's some encouragement out there for them.
Work your way northward through Nebraska, the Dakotas, and up into the Canadian prairies.
Yeah, Nebraska and South Dakota, you know, got awfully dry there for a while. They've had a couple of little rain events. They still are in the midst of drought. They need more moisture. It's not occurring right now. In fact, we're seeing 80 and 90 degree temperatures occurring from the Dakotas all the way up into the heart of Canada's prairies as a rather massive blocking weather pattern is in place, including a strong high pressure ridge. And so these areas are drying down at the moment. Now, the ridge itself, at least the part of it that's in Canada, is expected to stay in place through Friday or Saturday, and then a little disturbance is going to break it down. We'll try to scatter some showers and thunderstorms into the Dakotas and parts of Canada's eastern prairies, but most likely that rain's not going to be enough to really make a big difference, and these areas are going to still need better rains down the road. The western part of Canada's prairies, Alberta in particular, is going to be seeing good solid rainfall this weekend. Much improved wheat, barley, and canola conditions are likely to come out of it, and that will certainly be a big plus for them. You know, a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks, we've been talking periodically about too much moisture and cold weather in northeastern Saskatchewan and Manitoba in some of their canola and wheat areas. And this heat wave that's occurring right now is exactly what they needed to get the ground to firm up and to get farmers in the field. So big improvement taking place there. And as long as it rains in another week or so, I think they're going to be doing much better than what anybody had thought.
Anything of interest you're watching in the Corn Belt?
The Corn Belt is going to dry down here for the next week to maybe 8 or 9 days. I don't think that's going to be a big issue. The subsoil moisture profile looks pretty good. Now, there's some pockets. We already mentioned South Dakota, but Minnesota needs a little better rain. And some of the areas nearby there in northwestern Iowa, even southeastern Iowa for that matter, there's a need for rain. I'm to think of it, I think they got a decent rain in northwestern Iowa just here recently, but there is a need for more moisture in southeastern Iowa. The bottom line is that we're going to firm the soil up across the Midwest, but you know, it was so cold for so long, these crops really needed to warm up and maybe even be subjected to a little moisture stress, and I think they're going to get that for just a little while. We look at cooler weather coming up in the latter part of June, and that should come with rain. So I think we're going to be just fine in the big picture there.
Hopscotch across the Atlantic Ocean. Tell me about conditions in Western Europe. France in particular, I think it's turned hot there.
Yes. This past 5 days, we have had a massive ridge of high pressure over Western Europe, and it's really become quite hot for them. 80 degree temperatures occurring routinely with a few temperatures over 90 and no rain. And France already had a little bit of a moisture deficit coming into that ridge. And so now they're drying down very quickly. The topsoil is very short of moisture, and the subsoil is marginally adequate to slightly short. So another 5 days of drying will occur there before rain resumes, but it does look like rain is going to show up as we go from the latter part of the coming weekend into most of next week. And as long as the rain occurs as advertised, I think they'll do okay. I'm a little bit concerned that the west, central, and south parts of France may not get that much moisture. The rest of Europe should stay in fairly good shape. It has firmed up, but it's going to get timely rain and stay in good shape, I think, overall.
Does that include Eastern Europe?
Eastern Europe has had a bit of drier biased conditions recently, and they were quite cold, like the Midwest was here over the past week to two. And the warming that's occurring there now is certainly helpful, but a new surge of cold is expected to evolve over Western Russia and parts of Poland and the Baltic states. And so for the next 7 days, they're going to be fairly cool once again there. I don't think that's going to hurt the moisture profile much. Not in Eastern Europe, but in the western parts of the former Soviet Union, it's going to be pretty wet and cool for a good 7 days, extending from the Black Sea and all the way north through Western Russia. And so there may eventually be some chatter out there about wet weather disease west of the Ural Mountains in parts of Russia. So we'll need to kind of keep an eye on that. I don't think, again, this is going to be a big crisis, but it definitely needs to warm up and dry down a little bit.
Dive south-southeasterly through India and Indonesia. I'm particularly interested in El Nino in Indonesia because it can be an indicator for the rest of the planet.
That's exactly right. El Nino is breathing down their necks. We're seeing rapid development towards that end. And over the next few weeks, we will hear about El Nino being declared. It will take a while for the atmosphere to respond to the changes in ocean surface temperatures, but already the forecast doesn't show a lot of rain for India or for Sumatra and Java, Indonesia. These areas are all going to dry down. I think western part of Indonesia is probably going to dry down most significantly as we move forward through this next two-week period. In India, it just looks like the monsoon's going to get off kind of a shaky start, kind of erratic rains where some folks will do better than others, but definitely not the best start to the monsoon. And with El Nino coming on, of course, El Nino will have a negative impact on India's rain later in the year. So if they start off with a moisture deficit, they could get into a bigger issue with dryness later in July and August.
Well, because geographically, before I let you go, Australia is not all that far, relatively speaking, from Indonesia. Any impacts there?
You know, in Australia right now, they're being blessed with some timely rain for the wheat, barley, and canola crop. Southeastern Queensland and a big part of northeastern New South Wales has been getting rain routinely over this past week. And most of southern Australia has done well with precipitation, with maybe the exception of a part of western Australia where they've been a little bit dry biased. It's very interesting if you go back in history and look at the years in which El Nino develops. Quite often, the winter season precipitation is favorable, but boy, as soon as you get into the spring and early summer, it gets really dry, especially in eastern Australia. So this wetter bias right now is really giving some hope for the winter crops, but I wouldn't turn your back very long because I think the odds are pretty good they'll get dry when we get out into reproduction season in September and October.
We made it across the planet. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You bet.
That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.